Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My guest today is Akhil Chauhan. He runs the Writer's Job Newsletter, or TWJN, which is exactly what it sounds like, a twice-weekly newsletter full of calls to pitch publications and both freelance and full-time jobs. It's been around for a little over 3 years and a little under 200 issues. And I actually first subscribed during a job search 3 years ago, which we can get into. Anyways, does that cover it? Or is there anything else you want to add about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so that's me. So I started off working in software and things like this during the pandemic. Like a lot of people got interested in little side projects and things like that. And that's where the Writer's Job Newsletter came from. And there's a bit of an interesting backstory behind it, which I'm sure we'll get into. But I wasn't actually the founder of this newsletter. I actually took this over from somebody else, which not many people know, but we can dig into that.
Yeah, well, that is exactly what I want to get into, because as I was researching it, I was like, what is this guy doing running a newsletter about freelance writing? But then I scrolled through your entire Twitter history, and I found a tweet from February 27th, 2022. You said that you had just had an offer for a digital business accepted, and I was like, that's it, that's the thing. He bought it. So I guess a lot to talk about here, but I'd love to hear like why, and I haven't talked to anybody. I've talked to somebody whose newsletter got acquired a few months ago, but I haven't talked to anybody who's acquired a newsletter. So I'm quite curious to get into this. So first off, like from the beginning, what were you looking for? Sounds like you kind of wanted to get into buying an online business as a side hustle. That was your interest. How do you get from that just basic desire to finding this newsletter and buying it?
Yeah, sure. So I can go into a bit of the background. So it was middle of pandemic. I was living in Toronto, middle of winter, lockdowns, all of that, a lot of free time like many people had.
Yeah.
And I had an itch that wasn't getting scratched through my day job. And I was looking for other types of avenues that I could put some of this extra energy and focus into. Then I was thinking, okay, what could I do? I could start a business. I could make a little app of some sort. I could work on some hobbies and projects. And I mapped out maybe 6 or 8 different potential avenues. And then a media business was one of those ideas. And I thought, okay, newsletters, we were at sort of peak Substack at that time. Everyone was setting up their own newsletter. And then I thought, okay, maybe newsletters would be a good way of scratching an itch without having to, learn an entirely new domain. Pretty familiar with writing, pretty good at writing. So I thought, okay, I think I'd be able to find a newsletter and grow it. Initially, I did think about starting something from scratch. Then I was looking on certain marketplaces that were getting more popular at the time. MicroAcquire being one of them. Deuce is another that's focused just on newsletters. And I thought, maybe I could save 2 years worth of grind and trying to find a niche in all of these things and get into something where a lot of the market validation essentially has already been done. And I could find something that maybe I could just improve, innovate, and sort of grow from there.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. You're looking for something that like has product market fit a little bit. It's you don't want to go through the rigmarole of like, what am I going to write about? Okay, now I have to figure out the style, the format, etc. It makes sense. And I think when you bought it, it was at like 2,500 subscribers or something. Okay, actually, but before we get back into that, so I do want to hear like what, because I'm sure there was probably, 4 or 5 newsletters you were considering buying. Why this one?
Yeah, of course. And I was looking at a few different ones. Some were in really hot niches, and this is pre-AI, but there was one AI one that seemed quite interesting. But then I saw this one about writing, and I was like, this is it. This is the fit for me. I love writing. I love reading journalism. So I've always been interested in writing. I've always cared about good journalism. And here's this thing that can help writers with their jobs. And it can also help me, do some of my own writing in a structured and formatted way. So it was sort of a fit between an opportunity that was there, something that was sort of potentially on the market, but not entirely. The seller wasn't 100% ready to sell when I had reached out to him. there was an interest and a passion there that was miles above all of the other opportunities that were out there as well. And of course, it was within sort of budget range that I had in mind. And it felt like there was a lot of low-hanging fruit that I'd be able to very quickly add value to the subscribers for. And you know, the mission from the start has always been to help freelance writers find better paying jobs. And that's really unchanged. Took over in about March 2022, and since then have just been doubling down on helping people find better paying jobs.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's a very solid concept, right? It's pretty easy to pick up that torch, I imagine. I don't know if you're comfortable sharing like the how much you spent to acquire it. You don't have to if you don't want to, but I am curious kind of the unit economics of like what goes into pricing that, like both for people, like I'm sure people listening would be curious to acquire a newsletter or have theirs acquired. What is the economics of that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so for me, there was a number of different factors that played into what I thought was a fair value and what the previous seller was willing to depart with it for. So we didn't use a more common method now, which is, okay, what's the price per sub, add a multiplier, you know, but a dollar or two, maybe, and then add a premium on top of that. We didn't do any of that. It was more of a, he had a number in mind and I backed into where I thought I'd be able to justify based on how I could grow it. And then we sort of agreed on a price. It was say below 10,000, above 5,000 US. So sort of that's the range that we were in. Looking back, that was also when valuations for these types of small little businesses were quite high. I think if you were looking at a similar sized newsletter today that was for sale, you'd probably pick up for a fair bit cheaper just because there's a lot more abandoned newsletters and small projects that have been left by the wayside and are available. But also, I think people have a better understanding of those unit economics. Back then, there wasn't really a lot of benchmarks and things that you could just have a look at that scale. There's obviously things at a much larger scale, but at that scale, there wasn't very much. So that's sort of what played into it. It was just a negotiation. We seemed to both be on the same page that we wanted this thing to live on. And he seemed to trust me that I would be the sort of right person to steward it. And once we got over that hump, it was, okay, well, here's the price that he would feel comfortable with. Here's the price that I'd be willing to pay. And then we sort of met in the middle.
Yeah. That seems like a pretty fair price for both of you. It's between $2 and $3 per subscriber, which is like, you know, on Beehive Boosts, for example, sometimes people aren't paying that much per subscriber, but sometimes people are. Obviously you want to pay less, but for an established thing, been around for a year, with such a good like niche figured out, I don't know, it seems pretty fair. I am curious though. I think you might have some help. I don't know in exactly what capacity. I don't know if somebody's helping you source the job listings and such. So my question is like, what is the process for writing one of these newsletters? Because now you do it twice a week, I think. There's kind of a premium and the regular. So what is the process and who else is doing it besides you working on it?
Yeah. No, solid question. So I'll talk about the collaboration first and then we'll talk about the writing of it. So when I took over the newsletter, there was a contractor who was helping me manage some of the social media. And that was just a legacy thing from the previous owner who was using one of the subscribers actually was helping to just post things on Twitter, just have a bit of a social presence. And after a few months of that, I felt like the tone and the personality and the voice that I wanted the newsletter to have was sort of diverging from what the online presence was. So I decided to rein that in and just sort of take over that side myself, just so I could have a bit more control over the voice of the public persona.
The brand voice.
The brand voice, yeah, exactly. Because that was something that I was quite intentional with, to keep things as seamless as possible for the subscribers. You know, the subscribers aren't there for me. I love being there for them, but they're there for the opportunities. And I didn't want them to feel like, oh, this was a big change or anything like that. Like, so that's quite good to hear.
Yeah. They need to rely on it.
Exactly. Yeah. People are using this to find find jobs, you know, find paying work. So it's really important that they feel comfortable that this is under good stewardship. And that was one of the big things that I tried to manage with that transition. Now, as for the support now, so it's mainly me that runs everything. So that's subscribers, that's the social media, pulling together job opportunities, writing it week in, week out. My partner does help me a little bit with, you know, just pulling together some of the opportunities, but it's still a bit of a slog to make sure that this is the best newsletter in this space. Yeah. And the big thing that we always try to do is find things that are paying and have pay transparency, because I think that's so important for people that are trying to find these types of jobs, because so often things aren't transparent until you have to put together a detailed pitch, you invest hours writing this thing, and it could completely not be worth your time.
Even then you find out it's successful. $50 and you've already put in 3 hours pitching. Yeah.
Right, exactly. You haven't even written the piece yet and you're behind that. So that's one of the things that's quite important to me.
So one more question about all that. So how you find the opportunities to feature? Because there's a lot. I think it's like, yeah, I don't know, 40 plus per issue. And maybe some of those are regular, and so that's easy. You just always keep them in, but like monitor if anything has changed. Is it mostly like Twitter? Do you have any like automation set up where you've got like, you know, a bot that checks, you know, the New Yorker website? I don't know. How do you find these opportunities?
Yeah, yeah. So I'll just explain sort of the structure of the newsletter. So yes, there's maybe two portions to the opportunities that we share. So half of that is the calls to pitch for specific finite pieces of work, journalism, research, things like this. So that is, oh yeah, I'm writing an article for the Austin Chronicle, and I need somebody to go out and go to this food festival, $250 to do a little write-up on what happened that day. So that's sort of one side of things. And I think that's where a lot of the freelance writers really like to get opportunities from, because it gives them the flexibility of finding multiple different opportunities, work on their own schedule, all of the promises to freelance writing. Mm-hmm. And the second half of the newsletter is focused more on either full-time or longer-term freelance jobs. So these are the things that aren't as finite as a pitch call, but are, you know, could be many months of work, it could be a full-time job opportunity. And in that portion, it's, you know, journalism, it's marketing, it's social media management, and it's those types of more permanent type of roles. Mm-hmm. So sourcing each of those, I wish there was a bot that would make this easier. Honestly, if there is, let me know, because I spend hours every week scouring 50 different bookmarks and tabs and Twitter profiles and Reddit posts and a whole bunch of other forums and Facebook pages. There's a lot of places that I go to curate all of this, and it is a lot of work. One of the challenges, particularly on the pitch call side, is that there's no standard format of how these things are outlaid. So it requires you to actually go in and find them. Somebody might be just referencing a pitch, and then you need to go to the website to understand how much it's paid. Others will have all of the information there. Others will include parts of information, but they won't include the pay, so you need to DM them personally. So it's a very manual task. And while there could be ways of automating aspects of it, I think that automation, based on my experience, would probably lead to a poorer experience for the writers, because there'd be worse job opportunities.
Well, I respect that you say that, because I think that is, you know, whatever, AI can be useful in such many ways. Personally, I don't use it in too many ways in my work, because I agree. It's like, I don't know, it's the human touch that makes these things worthwhile and good. Before we go into the audience itself, I'm curious about like the split between where, and I'm sure it's, I don't know, maybe you have an approximate idea, but the split between where these opportunities are based. And I know it's mostly remote writing, but is it more US, more UK? What's the mix?
Yeah, so this is actually something that I've noticed has been changing over time a little more. The US opportunities for what the Writer's Job newsletter does has been increasing quite significantly at a higher rate than the UK. And the main reason for that isn't because there are fewer opportunities in the UK. There naturally will be, because it's a smaller place, fewer people. But the main driver behind that is because pay transparency is much more of a movement here in the US than in the UK. So just by nature of this movement here in the US, states like New York, Colorado, California, having to put out upfront on job opportunities, how much somebody can expect to be compensated for their work. So I'd say the split in terms of those opportunities is probably reflective in the subscriber base as well. I think I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's maybe 70 or 65% US based in terms of the subscribers. And I think the opportunities probably reflect that.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. Okay, back to the newsletter. I want to talk about growth a bit. So I like I said, I've been a subscriber for 3 years. April 16th, 2021 was a check. That's when I got my "you're signed up" email. And I know where I found it. So I was subscribed to the Study Hall newsletter at the time, which still exists. It's changed a bit. I think it's changed ownership, but that was kind of a similar thing, but more of like community based. But then they also had like a weekly opportunities thing. And I'm pretty sure I found the Writer's Job newsletter in one of their classified sections, clicked it, signed up. And then, so that's how I found it. I'm sure plenty of other people found it that way. But then also in a LinkedIn comment you posted 2 years ago or so, a year and a half ago, I don't know. You said that it had grown 100% through organic social, but that it had become unfocused and spread too thin, which I think that's probably what you were talking about with the consultant and you taking back over. And then you said you refocused on Twitter and Reddit and the growth shot up. So that was a lot of information, but let's start. Let's do it in a few chapters, maybe. So before you bought it, how had the list grown to about 20? It was like 2,700 or whatever. How had we gotten there?
Yeah, so the majority of that was through organic social. There were a couple of experiments that I think the previous owner had ran on Reddit. I think there were a couple of paid ads. I think there were a couple of newsletter features, Study Hall being one of them. Mm-hmm. I remember that one being relatively successful. But the majority of it was organic outside of those two. There were also a bunch of other channels that this was being pushed into. So there was the Twitter focus. There were a couple things on Reddit. There are a bunch of Facebook pages where things were being pushed to. And I want to say that there was one more, but I'm blanking on what it was. So there was a few different areas. And when I got involved and looked at where is actual growth coming from, it was clear that Twitter and Reddit were the places to double down. Mm. So that was where I was like, hey, let's stop posting in 15 different places and let's just focus on the ones that are working and double down on those.
Yeah. Are you still doing the Reddit? Because I found the Twitter is quite active. I dug around a little bit for the Reddit, but I couldn't find it. Maybe I didn't dig deep enough, but
I mean, you've dug pretty deep if you're going through these LinkedIn posts. So I'd say you went pretty far. But yeah, this was one that was, it used to be quite successful. It used to be very successful, actually. And it was just a way of providing all of the research that I was doing week in, week out to another set of people that weren't on the core channel, which was Twitter, or subscribed. And I was just curating the full list of jobs, or maybe the top five paying jobs from the week, and just putting them out on a Reddit post in a couple of different places. And initially there was sort of no, hey, click here to subscribe or anything. You need to respect the rules of different communities, and Reddit is very focused on not encouraging self-promotion, so I was very respectful of that. Since then, I think some of the rules have changed, and the places that I was posting these things, even though I wasn't pushing them as aggressively as other people might do, they decided they didn't like these curated posts anymore. So I had to step down and sort of turn away from that channel. So right now, pretty much all the growth comes from Twitter or recommendations in other newsletters.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so real quick, I want to touch on the metrics. So today, how many subscribers, open rate, and click rate?
Okay, so I pulled some of this up earlier. So we are currently at just over 10,000 subs. So that was after we did a bit of a cleanup towards the end of last year. So broke that milestone, which is great. We're currently at around 55% open rates. So not bad. Things I can explain some of the history of why that's gone down. And clicks are at about 9 to 12. So about just over 10,000 subs, about 53% opens, and about 8 to 12 on the click through.
Are there any other metrics you track, like segments you've made or anything like that?
I track high level different sources of subscribers, whether somebody comes through Twitter or they go directly to the website. But no, that's something that I would like to do more of, but I just don't have time, honestly.
Yeah. No, I mean, one that comes to mind, and I think I said the same thing to Kate Samuelson, who I featured last week, Cheapskate London, was like you could set up a segment like this pretty simply, like how many people are clicking at least once a month, you know, because then that's a really good measure of like how many people are getting consistent value out of it and whatever you do with that data. But anyways, so I mean, you were saying 55% open rate, which is quite a good number, you were saying it with a little pain. So what was that pain?
So this used to be a bit higher. This used to be up to about 62-61% a little while back, and the click through was about 15-18% percent. So the conventional metrics that you measure success by with a newsletter were a little higher earlier. Now, there's been a couple of different ways in the way that we've changed running the newsletter, which has caused some of that. So you mentioned the split between, or you mentioned briefly the premium and the free version. So there's always been a premium and a free version. When I took over the newsletter, the premium was making about $150 a month. We can get into some of what that's increased to now, but based on some of the metrics and opens and engagement and things like this, I felt like the more reliable way to monetize the newsletter and justify all the effort that goes in every month is through charging premium subscribers and getting value from them, getting the value to them in a way that it is fair for both of us. So helping them to get the opportunities, but then also making sure that the subscribers who are willing and able to pay can also
fair exchange of goods and services.
So that's sort of one of the things that's shifted. So while previously all opportunities were available to everybody, now free subscribers get access to a good portion of them, and obviously the Twitter's always free, where we post a lot of opportunities. But now if you want everything curated in your inbox without any of the hassle, there is a premium fee for that.
Your LinkedIn is not that active. You've posted, I believe, 8 times. The fifth time you posted was the first time you posted was like 2021 or something. Fifth time you posted was the summer of 2022, and you posted about writing the newsletter. You're like, only 5 of my closest friends know this, but I've been doing this. I think summer of 2023 or so. Anyways, only 5 of my closest friends know this. I've been writing this newsletter for the past year. Here's what I've been doing. Blah blah blah. Why had you choose? I mean, I think I know why you chose to keep it private. It's because you were like, you'd bought it and you were still getting used to it, et cetera. That makes sense. I don't know if there's more reasons we can get into it, but all that aside, why did you at that time choose to like start, you know, saying, hey, I write this newsletter, and stop keeping it private?
It's a good question. And it is completely against my personality to put a post like that out. So it was a bit of a change in direction. And I'll be honest with you, the reason that I did this was because I was part of a writing course, actually. It was by a businessman who's now a bit of an internet personality called Sean Puri, who has a popular podcast called My First Million. It's a great listen. And I was part of his power writing course. And he had a bunch of different templates and structures that he used to get really popular online. And one of them was this. And the other key message was like, you can do all this cool stuff, but if nobody knows about it, you're really limiting the mm-hmm. number of opportunities that might come your way. And I said, huh, yeah, I'm doing this thing, I'm writing, and nobody knows about it. Why? I'm putting in all this effort. Of course, it's adding a lot of value to the subscribers, but without my name attached to it, you know, I might be losing some potential opportunities, yeah. whether they're related to the newsletter or otherwise, that could be attracted to me if I just put something out there. And I did, and yeah, it felt good writing it. It felt good putting it out there. It got decent engagement for the things that somebody's never posted before, really.
120 likes or something, I think.
Yeah, right. Like, I was pretty happy with that, which is probably the number of followers I've got on LinkedIn, probably.
No, you've got 800 or so now. I checked.
Okay, nice.
But that was, you know, at the time, maybe it was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that was sort of the thought process behind it, behind making that post, at least. But then I think the other question is, you know, my relationship with social media, because as you noted, I've not been doing much since then. And that's mainly because I do like keeping certain things separate from my professional persona and my personal persona and my side project persona, whether it's healthy or not, compartmentalize these things. And I find it's easier for me to stay focused on each of them without having them intermingled with the persona that is me. It's like I've got these different places that I do things at. And for me, that's a healthier way of just staying abreast of everything that's happening.
No,
from a social media perspective specifically, like, I think it helps me stay grounded in this thing is not me. This is the newsletter. The newsletter, people love it, adds a lot of value. But I think that helps me not attach so much of my identity to the social media metrics that I think I would otherwise potentially get caught up in.
Yeah, I like that. I really respect that. I think too, like, I mean, there's, besides just compartmentalizing it for like your own sanity and such, like, it makes it easier if in the future, like, you got tired of running this, but then you want to sell it or something, right? Yeah. It's not like, how do we replace your voice? It's like, oh no, somebody else can just come in and like, you just write like a nice little intro note and then you put in the stuff and you go on. So I don't know. I respect that. I like, it took me a second to find your Twitter too, because you weren't linking it anywhere. But I have to find your Twitter. I have to see what you're posting about so I can figure out that you bought this newsletter. But even on there too, you were like, it's definitely a different you. But you're again not posting that much, which is, I think, quite healthy. Anyways, we can move on from that. I do want to go back to monetization.
One other thing on the social media is, I probably would post more on that if I didn't have the newsletter, because all of the extracurricular time that I've got pretty much gets spent on that. So all of the thought and energy goes into the newsletter, really.
Yeah.
That's where my extra juice goes, instead of thinking about my own personal brand or things like that.
That makes sense. I mean, there's a time like between jobs when I was like, oh, what am I going to, I want to write. So I started writing a lot of letterboxed reviews. And then now I don't really do that because I have other things to write. One real quick question there, though. I don't think I asked this earlier. Do you have like an approximate how much time you think you spend per week on the newsletter?
Yeah, it's probably maybe 6 to 8 or 10 hours, depending on how much. Majority of that's looking for opportunities, because it's really ramped up since there's been the 2 sends per week, because we're charging people properly now. So before, when the premium thing was more like a Patreon type of model where pay if you can afford it, whereas now, because we're paywalling content, the issues need to be up to standard. So that's really increased the amount of time that we spend on it.
That makes sense. Let's get into people paying you for content. So the premium, like you said, it was kind of like a more of a Patreon buy us a coffee kind of deal for a while. And then the actual proper premium, when did you launch that?
I guess that was probably relatively recently, I would say, I'm looking at a calendar over there, by the way.
Yeah.
I think it was November.
Yeah.
Is when we sort of did the soft launch and started to play around with like, okay, hey, this thing's coming. And then here it is. It was probably around November. And then I think we ran a couple sales or promotions in December. And then since then, it's just been, converting people across from the free version to the paid, justifying why the paid is so much better than the free and why this newsletter is also better than other things that might do similar things.
Yeah. And so I think this is one of three monetization tactics you have or levers you have. There's the premium, you do some manual ad sales, and you use the Beehive ad network. Is there anything else? Is it just those three?
Pretty much those three. I've done a couple affiliate things in the past, but I wasn't a fan of those types of engagement. So right now it's those three.
Yeah. You don't have to share like your exact revenue numbers. I did see on Twitter there was like a Beehive post that you had made a few months ago. You'd made like $1,400 from the Beehive ad network in 1 month, which is pretty good for just being one of the levers. Can you share though like approximate percentages of how the revenue breaks down?
Yeah. I think that post might have included a couple months of revenue in that post, which has been sidebar amazing. Like the Beehive ad network is such a value add for subscribers. It's probably as a paying user of Beehive, one of my favorite features, because it takes out all of the headache that goes into
a lot of work.
Organizing, scheduling, viewing copy, back and forth, embedding, looking at metrics, getting paid. All of that's done with a couple of clicks, which is amazing. And coming back to this split, so it's roughly a 80-20 split right now, I'd say, between premium subscribers and sponsored content. And that sponsored content is probably a mix of
mainly Beehive ad. Sorry.
Premium is 80%.
Wow, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, premium is 80%. And the ad network is the majority of that remaining 20%.
Mm-hmm. Do you do much manual ad sales still, or is it more mostly the Beehive ad network now?
Yeah, still get a few every month usually. And those would be either people inbound, former sponsors want to sort of go again, other offers and things that people might be running occasionally, I'd feature them. But the majority of that is now just the Beehive network.
Nice. Easy.
Yeah.
Moving on from this, I want to go back to audience. So a question I often ask people, but more often than not, people don't really have an answer for it. It's not something they really think about, is like responsibility to your audience. Whereas you, it keeps coming up. You keep bringing it up without me having to ask you. You know, it's like, this is a service. People rely on this for their income. You know, you want to be very careful in like not inserting yourself too much. It's clearly something that matters a lot to you. So I like that. I respect that. I don't necessarily need to wax more on that, but I am curious about your relationship to your audience, besides just like, you know, being like eager to give them a good product. Is there like, do you engage with these people? Is there much like, you know, comments, discourse? How do you engage with what's your relationship to your audience?
Overall, it's a relatively distant one for the masses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I provide the service to the writers, and that is my priority. And like I said, I don't want to insert myself too much, but I do have a good relationship with a handful of subscribers. They know who they are, and they would give me feedback. Yeah, shout out to them if you're listening to this. Amara, I see you. some of them are so lovely. They encourage me, that they're so appreciative of work. They know how much effort it is to pull all of these things together. And they're the ones that I really look at for feedback and things like that. And they're the ones oftentimes who've been supporting for an extended period of time, which is really good. But yes, it is intentionally quite distant, mainly because I see the newsletter as almost like a utility for them. get access to this suite of opportunities week in, week out. It needs to be reliable. It needs to come in every week, twice a week, regardless of work schedules, regardless of the travel that I have to do for the day job or personal vacations. I always try to make sure that people are getting the newsletter and getting the opportunity specifically. Mm-hmm. And if that means I have to take time away from putting Akil in there, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Especially because like with some people, you can get ahead on the news. Some people's newsletters, they can get ahead. With mine, I can get ahead a little bit. I'm not as ahead as I'd like to be, I'll admit. but with you, it's actually quite hard to, because everything is, you know, what are the pitches this week, right? You can't feature something that's like 2 weeks old. Do you ever like, have you taken any weeks off or anything?
There was 1 week that I remember taking off because we had a loss in the family. So that was one where on the day, I just sent an apology to everybody. There is a week that I'm taking off, not this weekend, but the following weekend, because I'm going to be out in rural Scotland and won't have access to internet. So I try not to, just because I know that so many people rely on this for their mm-hmm. work. So I don't want my personal schedule to get in the way of them finding job opportunities.
Yeah, that makes sense. That'll be nice too. They'll escape the muggy Austin heat for the buggy Scottish Highlands a little bit.
Yeah, right. Nice. But yeah, it is a bit of a grind, honestly.
Yeah,
like, there are weeks when it is tough and it's hard to manage everything. But even in those weeks where I might not be able to give 100%, try to do 80%, try to do 70%, and try to get something out there for them, mm-hmm. because I know that a lot of people, it is important for their work.
Yeah, no, give them a little something. So one thing, going back to that LinkedIn post, you include a list of 6 things you'd learned about over the course of doing it. I imagine some of these things you're not really doing anymore. Some of these things you're doing more and have learned more about. The list of things was cold email, brand building, website design, employing contractors, managing a community, and finding and running sponsorships. Are there any, we don't have to go over every single one, that would be a little boring, but maybe one or two of those things that like you think about the most, or that you feel you've learned about the most, or learned something that you'd like to share with other newsletter creators.
So I think the power of a cold email is so underrated, even in a world like today where we are bombarded with emails promising the world.
Yeah.
You never know where just pinging somebody at the right time with the right message can resonate. That was actually the way that I engaged with the seller of the newsletter. That's how this all came about. Well, I'd seen it listed on a couple of different places. I actually just cold emailed because I wasn't getting through on some of those other channels. And then that snowballed. A bunch of sponsorships come in that way as well. I think another thing that is important is brand building. Mm-hmm. And when I think about the Writer's Job newsletter brand, it is related to that former question, or that previous question on related to that utility. Like the brand of the newsletter is, I think it's reliability. Like, this is going to be here week in, week out, and you're going to get the best transparent pay opportunities. But I think that has been really important. And I think reining in a lot of the other distractions that we had for a period of time really helped refocus on that core mission, which is help writers get paid. And that's what I think a good brand is, when you can summarize it in a couple words. And that's what we really tried to focus on with the newsletter. Everything else is supporting that mission. You know, finding sponsorships helps to support that mission. Website design helps this get out to more people. The social media stuff gets the message out, helps people come to the brand. But it is really that I think the brand is core to what the newsletter offers.
Yeah, that's a strong point. I mean, not many people can just say help writers get paid. Like, that's 4 words there, right? That's it's a good brand, and it's about trust, right? And like, I don't know, I think when some people think of brand building, it's just like the visual aspect of it, but it is more like what people think of when they think of your thing.
Yeah, Yeah, and yeah, what one small story. This is one of my favorite stories about the newsletter. So I got an email once from a writer who was really struggling, and she was looking to break into sort of the B2B tech writing space, but she hadn't had much experience in that. And then through an opportunity she found in the newsletter, she had 4x'd her income onto a multi-month engagement with a brand. And I was just floored. The appreciation she had in that note was amazing. You know, she could afford to do stuff with her family. She could, you know, pay for things for the house. And it was like, wow, like, this is why I do it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, part of it's like, oh yeah, you know, run a little business online and it's a bit of fun. But really, the outcome is really impactful for a lot of people. And I think getting messages like that when they do come in really, really does make all the effort worthwhile.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I mean, you're doing work worth doing, right? Which I think that's something people have trouble with sometimes when they're starting a newsletter, where it's like,
yeah,
I want to start a newsletter because it's like trendy or something, or like I like writing, but it can be hard to find that purpose. And it's, yeah. I don't know, it's cool that you like, this again, this is something you found and bought, but it's still like you were able to plug into that purpose.
Yeah.
It's nice. Wraps up neatly in a bow. Couple more questions. So you've been doing this now for like a little over 2 years. You've been running it, correct? 2 years from now, well, actually, let's go a little slower. By the end of this year, what are your goals? And then beyond that, 2 years from now, what are your goals?
Yeah. Yeah. So the immediate goal right now is to revamp some of the additional offerings for premium subscribers. So premium subscribers, as it is today, they get 2 full sends every week that have all of the opportunities from the last few days and a summary of all of the opportunities from the entire week. That's in their inbox. They also get access to a historical list of all of the opportunities that have ever been shared in the newsletter in a Google Sheet. And that's something that we're revamping. So we're going to make that more accessible and make some of the information that's stored within it a lot easier to navigate. Because I think tools like that, which have transparent pay on a pitch-by-pitch basis, will allow writers to understand how much does this publication tend to pay, even if they're not transparent with the pay on any single opportunity. So I think that's a huge, huge value add, but we just need to refine that offering and make it more accessible. There's a couple other things that we're working on after that, again, just to add more value to the people that are choosing to pay for this week in, week out. And one of those is a complete breakdown of pitch guides and sort of having a library of pitch guides from around different publications so people can get an understanding of, you know, what our publication is looking for when it comes to pitches. And then a longer term goal is to have something that is sort of like a how-to guide on how to write pitches, but informed by successful pitches. So my goal would be to have a library for premium subscribers who can just go in and have a look at pitches that have worked in the past for other writers that they can use as models for their own approaches. So those are 3 things that I'm focusing on. We're really doubling down on how to add more value to that paid subscriber group for the next sort of, you know, 6-8 months or so.
Yeah. That makes sense. In like an abstract long-term vision way, 2 years, 5 years, not quite 10 years. What, like in your wildest dreams, what does this become?
Yeah, this is something I
haven't thought. Or wait, real quick too. It's like also like, I don't think everything needs to like become something big. Like maybe what you just described is perfect, right? So don't feel like you need to like give some grand vision.
Yeah. I mean, my immediate vision is just to continue having this newsletter be the best place for writers to find paid opportunities. That's it. Whether that the metrics associated with that, maybe that's a higher subscriber base, maybe that's increased revenue, maybe that's better newsletter statistics, maybe it's being featured in more places. Like the newsletter was featured in Writer's Digest as one of their top 100 websites for writers last year, which was amazing. And yeah, there's a bunch of other metrics that can help guide to as to whether that's being met. But that's the goal. Like, make sure that this is the best place. What does that look like? Okay, yeah. It might not be the biggest list, but it's going to be the most valuable list of mm-hmm. opportunities that are coming out. The most trustworthy. It's going to be a place where publications will eventually come to proactively to offer their pitches instead mm-hmm. of having to post in some other place, because they know that the level of quality of subscriber or a pitch that they're going to get from this newsletter is going to be higher than if they just blast something out on Twitter or other social media platforms. So I'd say that's sort of the amorphous goal. Like, what does that look like? I've no idea. Like, the plan right now is just to keep offering the best product in this space and let the subscribers vote with their
subscriber, with their open. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Okay. One more question. It's a two-parter. Biggest regret from running this, or misstep or failure?
Biggest misstep. I think there was a period of time where I fell out of love with the newsletter mm-hmm. and I wasn't as committed as I should have been. That is, I hope it's come across, has been sort of reestablished, and there's this real sense of duty that I feel now. But I think there was a period of time, and it was around that transition and move and personal stuff going on, that meant that I didn't have the mental bandwidth to give the newsletter the effort that it required. I'd say that was necessary, I think, but also I look back at that period of time with a bit of regret, because I think I probably could have continued to do more, even if it was a bit challenging for me at the time. But I'd say that's the only one. A couple other small things, you know, maybe I could have taken the reins sooner. I should have subscribed to Beehive sooner. I can't mm-hmm. believe I ummed and ahed on that decision for so long.
You were on, what was it before, Subkit or Mail? Or was it MailChimp?
Subkit. I was on MailChimp very early on, and then Subkit for a period of time, and then I transitioned to Beehive. And yeah, I just wish I had done that sooner.
It's a good platform. Okay, I think that's it. Where should the people find you?
Okay, you can find me at thewritersjobnewsletter.com. It's a bit of a mouthful, but that's it. You can find me at job_writers on Twitter. And you can Google me, search my name, and I might pop up, I might not. Yeah, see what you get.
It's a bit hard to find. All right, this has been the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Our guest today has been Akhil Chauhan from the Writers Job Newsletter. I have been your host, Francis Zier, and it would really help me out if you went and rated us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I'll see you next week. Thank you.